we're holding, and then Galad Amr Aleph, seventh line. We talked about how there was a mitzvah of Arava in the Bais Hamikdash, and we talked about the various aspects of it. You have they would stand Arava around the Mizbeach, as we're going to learn in the next Mishnah. Then they would walk around the Mizbeach, and we turn and then at the end on Hashanah Rabbah, particularly you beat the Aravos. So as far as the walking around the Mizbeach, we discussed the question: did they walk around holding the Aravos, or were they holding Lul of an Esrog? So we were talking about the different aspects of that mitzvah. So in particular, we said that so lulav and esrog, of course, is daraisa, and as we learned in the previous parak in the Bais Hamikdash, it's daraisa for 7 days and outside the Bais Hamikdash for one, and then drabbanan Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai made a takana that we take it full 7 days. Then we have, as far as the arava, then we have, as far as the arava, we're in the Bais Hamikdash. They stood up the aravas every day. Apparently they only banged it on the ground one time, also on Hashanah Rabbah. So nowadays we don't do anything about the standing up of the aravas or the walking around the bima with them. All we do is the beating. By the way, the word the Gemara uses for it is chavata. Rashi actually explains that, and some other Rishonim explain that chavata means waving them. So according to Rashi and some other Rishonim, it doesn't mean to bang them on the ground, it just means to wave them. Many other Rishonim learn that chavata means banging it. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah brings that therefore the minhag should really be to do both. First you wave the aravos, then you bang them. Lamaisa, nobody seems to be noyed in that. Everybody just bangs them. So talking further about those concepts, the Gemara asks, or the Gemara says, Amalei Abaye L'Rava, Maishna Lulav Davdinin Leis Shiva Zechel HaMikdash. Why is it when it comes to the Lulav, we do it for all 7 days during Sukkot as a Zechel for the Bais Hamikdash, outside the Bais Hamikdash, or Maishna Arava D'Lo Yavdinin Leis Shiva Zechel HaMikdash. Whereas by the Arava, we don't. We only do it one time. We only do it on Hashanah Rabbah. Rashi mentions, by the way, we're going to have on Amud Bey, a story involving Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik during the Chavata of the Arava, and he lived after the Churban. So why is it that we don't do it all 7 days? Amalei, so Rava answers him, Hoyova Adam Yotzi de Chivase ba'Arava Shabalulav. Because during the rest of the days, really a person can be Yotze, the mitzvah of Arava, with the Aravas that are part of the Lulav one day. Omalei, so Abaye says that doesn't work. What do you mean? There you're not doing it. There's no hecker that you're doing it as the separate mitzvah of Arava. It looks like you're just doing it as the Arava, as one of the Dalad Minim, so you're doing it as part of the Lulav. So you still don't have that for those 6 days you're really doing anything to remember the Arava of the Bais Hamikdash. So why not? So you might answer, okay, maybe what you do is you pick up the lulav twice. Maybe you pick up the lulav once, you say the bracha, then later on you pick it up again, and that second time maybe you have in mind that that's for the mitzvah of Arava. The fact is, we always see we don't do that. We don't necessarily pick up the lulav a second time. We do pick up the lulav a second time for halal, but we certainly don't have anything in mind that it should be for the Arava. So why don't we commemorate the Arava in some way during the first 6 days of Sukkot? So the answer is Amar of Zvid Mishmei the Arava. The difference is Lulav Da'araisa Avdin and Shiva Zechel HaMikdash. Because the Lulav is Da'araisa, therefore we want to do something all 7 days to remember the Bais Hamikdash. Arava Da'rabanan Lai Avdin and Lai Shiva Zechel HaMikdash. Whereas the Arava is only Da'rabanan, and therefore we don't need to do a Zechel HaMikdash all 7 days. So you're telling me, in other words, it sounds like what Rav Zvid is saying is that the Arava is in fact only a Din D'Rabbanan. So the question is,
what do you mean the Arava is D'Rabbanan? It's the Arba Minim to the Minim D'Oraisa.
As the separate mitzvah of Arava. The separate mitzvah of Arava, where again, they put them around the Mizbeach and marched around the Mizbeach, maybe holding the Aravas, maybe not. And then they wave them or beat them. Rav Zvid seems to be saying that that whole concept is Drabanan. The question is, Laman, according to which opinion are you telling me that it's only Drabanan? Elaim al-Abba Shol. Now, we had before on Daf Lama Dalet, and now we're having again. On the Chodesh, where exactly we learn this concept of Arava from, but we have Abba Shol and we have the Chachamim. Both of them agree that it is Daraisa. Both of them agree. It doesn't say explicitly in Chumash, fine. But La'aba Shol, Elaim La'aba Shol, are you going to say that we're talking according to Abba Shol? Ha'omer Arve Nachal Tziv. He says, when the Pasuk says about the Dalam Minim, Arve Nachal, Arve in the plural, meaning Arovois. Therefore, it means Shtayim, so it means two. Achas Lolula V'achas L'Mikdash. It means one Arava that goes in the Dalam Minim, and the other one that's used in the Bris Mikdash. So according to him, it is Daraisa, because we learn it from a pasuk, because we learn it from a word in Chumash. And if you're talking according to the Chachamim, then they say that's halacha l'moshe v'sinai. The Amr of Asi, Amr of Yechon, and Meshum of Nechunya ish bikas beis chorson, Esther Netzias Arava v'nitzach hamayim halacha l'moshe v'sinai. These three halachas are all halacha l'moshe v'sinai. Esther Netzias is, we learned this previously on Daf Lamed Daled. Esther Netzias is, you have, there's a certain period, there's a certain amount of time before Shmita when you're not allowed to do work on the land. You're not allowed to do work on the land during Shmita itself, of course. But you have, there's a certain amount of time before Shmita also that you're not allowed to, because then any work that you do during that time is preparing the ground for next year's crop and next year's Shmita. So part of that is plowing. But there's an exception. If you have a field of Besa, which has 10 young trees in it, Esenetius, 10 young trees, and they're scattered throughout the whole Besa, then you're allowed to plow the entire Besa for their sake, because then the plowing is not really in order to improve the ground for next year. It's in order to soften the soil and aerate it and allow more oxygen to get into it in order to help these trees continue to develop. And therefore, the halacha l'moshe v'sinai is that you're allowed to do that until Rosh Hashanah, until the actual beginning of Shmita. So that's one of these halachas. Rashi explained previously on Daf Lamed Daled the reason why we mention these three in one breath, Esther Netzias, Arava, and Nisach HaMayim, is because all three of those, the question came up in the Beis Medrash, where we learned them from, and the answer to all three of them was halacha l'moshe v'sinai, and therefore the Chachamim learned them as a unit. So Esther Netzias, Arava, the Arava that we're talking about in the Beis Medrash, and the Nisuch HaMayim, and the Nisuch HaMayim pouring water on the Mizbeach during the Sukkos, which we're also going to talk about later in more detail at the end of our parak, all of those are halacha l'moshe v'sinai. So either way, according to Abba Shol or according to the Chachamim, it's something that goes back to when the Torah was given. It's not something that the Rabbanon came up with later. So we're back to the question. Given that it is in some way Daraisa, either learned from a pasuk or halacha l'moshe v'sinai without a pasuk to back it up. Either way, why don't we make a zecher for it nowadays? Why don't we make a zecher rather all 7 days? Ela, Amar Rav Zvid, Yishmei de Rava. So rather, Rav Zvid, in the name of Rava, correct it. Not that it's Daraisa versus Darabanan, but think of it like this: Lulav de Islay Ikum in Atura Begvulin. The lulav, which there is a basis for it, minatora, even outside the Beis Mikdash. Because after all, we said outside the Beis Mikdash, you have one day of it. We said applies everywhere. Therefore, Abdinin Lo Shiva Zeichel Mikdash. Therefore, we want to do it for 7 days as a Zeichel Mikdash. Arava, the less like Ikum Minatora, whereas the Arava, it's true it is Daraisa, but the fact is that there's no Shurdash in the Torah to say the less the Ikum Minatora Begvulin. There's no Ikum Minatora from it outside of this Mikdash. The whole thing of the Arava, we said to begin with, applies only in the Beis Mikdash. There's nothing in the Torah about it being outside the Beis Mikdash at all. Therefore, lo yavdin in shiva zecher l'mikdash. So therefore, we're not going to do it for all 7 days outside the Beis Mikdash as a zecher l'mikdash, because even to begin with, even when the Beis Mikdash was standing, there was no particular inyan of doing it outside the Beis Mikdash. That's one way of learning. There's actually another way of punctuating the sentence, which puts the word begvulin with the second half of the sentence. Lulav de isra ikum in atzora begvulin avdin le shiva. and the same thing with the second half. According to, in other words, there's two ways of looking at it. The fact that we do, the fact that we do a rover nowadays, is it that we're doing it strictly zeicher l'mikdash, or is it that there is a certain aspect of the mitzvah that applies, that there's a certain aspect of the mitzvah that applies outside outside the Beis Hamikdash also, and therefore we're doing that. Rashi previously on Mem Gimel Amud Beis mentions that there's a minhag nevi'im involved, that we're going to talk soon about the chavita sarava, about the waving or beating of it, that we're going to talk about soon, that is a minhag or yisoid of the nevi'im. So if so, it could be that one way of understanding then is that does to begin with apply outside the Beis Hamikdash as well. Nevertheless, it's not explicitly written in the pasuk. Therefore we don't go so far as to do it all 7 days zeicher l'mikdash. Doing it one time is enough. Or again, we can say that what it means is that lulav you do have min haTorah, that it applies everywhere for one day, whereas a rava doesn't. So that's the difference then. That's why we commemorate the lulav for all 7 days, but the arava only for one day. Okay. Now, going back to, we said that part of the procedure with the arava is that they put them around the mizbeach, and then they walk around the mizbeach. And we said yesterday that according to many Rishonim, only the Kohenim walk around the mizbeach, because Yisraelim are not allowed into the area Bein Ha'ulam V'la Mizbeach, the area between the mizbeach and the front of the Heichal. There are actually Rishonim who disagree with that. The Urzarua, for example, disagrees with that and says Yisraelim are allowed to as well. And in fact, he says this is the basis for the fact is nowadays when we do Hashinus every day of Sukkot, we go around the Bima holding our Lulav and Esrog. That is meant to commemorate what they did back then. And we just discussed yesterday in the Gemara that at least according to one way of understanding the Maskana of the Gemara, they did in fact walk around with the Lulavim. They had the Arava standing there around the Mizbeach, but they did walk around with their Lulav and Esrog. And the fact is, we see that nowadays, not only Kohenim do the Hashinus, everybody goes around the Bima. So that would be, that would only be if Yisraelim did it in the Beis Hamikdash as well. Anyway, so Omer Shlokish. Now, the fact is like this. This area, Bein Ha'ulam V'la Mizbeach, has a greater Kedusha than the rest of the Azara. So there's a series of Mishnayos and Kalim that talk about 10 levels of Kedusha that there are in the world. Eretz Yisrael has more Kedusha than the rest of the world. Yerushalayim has more Kedusha than the rest of Eretz Yisrael. The Hanabayis more than Yerushalayim, etc., working all the way up to the Kodesh Kedusha. One of the distinctions it mentions over there is that this area, Bein Ha'ulam V'la Mizbeach, has greater Kedusha in that, among others, Kohenim who are Bali Mumim, or who have several other disqualifications, are not allowed to go in there. Another one Tosfos refers to is, let's say, Kohenim who have their hair too long, who didn't cut their hair in the last 30 days. Anyway, so Amar Reish Lakish, Kohenim Bali Mumim Nichnasim Bein Ha'ulam V'la Mizbeach Kedei Lotzis Ba'arava. So Reish Lakish says that even Kohenim who are Bali Mumim, and normally they would be excluded from the area Bein Ha'ulam V'la Mizbeach, but they're allowed to go into that area on Sukkos in order to be Yotze the Mitzvah of Arava. Amar Leih Rav Yechanan, so Rav Yechanan says to Reish Lakish, Mi Amra, who said such a thing? Now, what does he mean by who said such a thing? On the face of it, Rashi says, the Gemara assumes that what Rav Yechanan means to ask is, who says that there's a requirement, that there's a choiva to do this thing with the Arava in the first place, such that you're talking about lotisva, to be yotze with it. Yotze implies that there's a choiva, and that you're yotze now. So it sounds like Rav Yechanan is saying, who said that? Who says that you have to do that? What do you mean, ni amra? What do you mean, who said it? We just said that Rav Yechanan is part of that chain that says that Arava is halacha l'Moshe M'Sinai. So what do you mean, who said that it's a chayva? You yourself said that. Ella, no. What he means is, mi amra b'netila, who says that the requirement to do it involves picking it up. Dilma b'skifa. Maybe the requirement from Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai is only that it needs to be placed around the Mizbeach. In which case, you don't need all the Kohenim to be placing them. You could have, in other words, there's a difference. You have certain mitzvahs that are chovas gavra. Each person has to do individually. for example, and if we said that you have to pick up the Lulav, then if you said that, not the Lulav, if we said that you have to pick up the Arava, then that would be an individual choiv on each person. So then we would talk about whether Kohen and Baal and woman can do that as well. But then you have mitzvahs, which is choivas atzibur. You have something where you have things which it has to be accomplished, but one person does it on behalf of the whole tzibur. For example, bringing the karbanis. So another example would be placing the arabas around the mizbeach. Who says that maybe the mitzvah is only to place them around the mizbeach? And then, as we said yesterday, when they walk around the mizbeach, they're walking holding their lulavim. And in that case, you don't need every single kohen to be involved in putting up the arabas. You can have one kohen put them up. Put all of them up, and then you don't need Kohen and Baal and woman to be involved. Why dab the same way? As you don't say with the Avoda, for example, the Korbanos have to be brought. You're not going to say the Baal and woman are going to join in. You think you're going to have the Kohen and Tzmimim will do it. So first of all, who says that Bechlal was a mitzvah to put it to pick them up, maybe only to put them around them as they are? And also, Mi Omra, Baal and woman, Dilma and Tzmimim. Even if you say that it is an individual choiv on each person, fine, but maybe it's a choiv that applies only to the kohen and tzmimim. Who says it was meant to apply to the kohen and baal and woman in the first place? So that's Rabbi Yechanan's question on Rish Lakish, according to Rashi. Tosfos actually learns a little bit differently. When the Gemara asked, what does Rabbi Yechanan mean, mi omra, he himself said, the Gemara thought that Rabbi Yechanan is saying, sure, I know it's a choiv, but how do you know that it's a choiv d'oraisa? Such that now many of those Esther Milas that it describes in the Mishnayos and Kelim, some of them are Daraisa. For example, it mentions over there that Mitzaroyim are not allowed to come into Yerushalayim. That's Daraisa. Bodad Yeshu Bechutba Machna Meshavim. But some of those Milas, one of them being the fact that Beina Ulam Lamizdeach has a higher status, is Derabanan. So Tosfos learns that the question was that the Gemara assumed that to begin with, that Rabbi Yechanan's question to Rish Lakish was not like Rashi says, how do you know that it's a choiva? Who says maybe it's only Rishus? No, of course it's a choiva, but how do you know that it's Daraisa, and therefore that should be strong enough to override the din of Beina Olam V'Lamizbeach, which is the Rabbanan? Maybe the Arava itself is only the Takona of the Chachamim, and the Gemara says, what do you mean? Rabbi Yechanan himself said it's Halacha Moshe Sinai. So the answer is, yeah, but who says that it's Netila, maybe only Skifa? And after all, like we said, you could have one Kohen do it on behalf of everybody. Or Tosfos says also, the fact is, you only have one side of the Mizbeach, which is Beina Olam V'Lamizbeach, the west side. The other three sides, by definition, are not Beina Olam V'Lamizbeach. So you can have the Baal and woman could be working on putting the Aravos on those three sides, and only Kohen and Tzmimim will go and put them on the west side of the Mizbeach. So therefore, sort of Yechanan does not accept Rish Lakish's idea that the Baal and Mumim should be able to do that. Okay. Next, let's talk about. We said that the placing the Aravos around the Mizbeach is Daraisa. Either we learn it from the word Arve or it's Halacha L'Meshem Sinai. But now let's talk about the next stage of the Arava, which is the Chavita. The waving or beating of the Aravos. So where does that come from? Itzman, Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Shurban Levi, Chad Omer Arava Yisoid Nevi'im, between Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Shurban Levi, one of them says that the Arava is a Yisoid of the Nevi'im, meaning that the Nevi'im Achronim, the last Nevi'im, Chagis, Scharia, and Malachi, at the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash, they were among the Anshet Nesag Gola who made many Takonis. So one of their Takonis, a Yisoid that they made, is that we should wave or beat the Aravas. The other one says that it's not a Yisoid, it's only a Minhag. Rashi says that means they told the people to do it, but not as a takona, only as a minhag. They didn't say we're making it a takona derabanan that you have to do it. They just said we're establishing a minhag. Now, what would be the difference? Rashi says that the difference would be whether we make a bracha on it. If it's a yisoid, then we make a bracha on it, just like we make a bracha on other takonas derabanan, like lighting the menorah on Hanukkah or whatever. If we say that it's only a minhag, then you would not. We'll take up that point again on other days. Because the fact is, the question then becomes, is that in fact the case that we don't say a bracha on minhagim? We do in fact have at least one case where, according to many opinions, we do. So we'll revisit that point on Amud Beis. But anyway, so that's one way of understanding Minhag Nevi'im. There's a few other explanations that the Rishonim have. One of them is just that the Nevi'im themselves started doing it, and everybody else saw them doing it and copied them. So in that case, it wasn't something that they told the people to do in the first place. Whatever the case, so you have, again, one opinion is it's Yisod Nevi'im, something that the Nevi'im, Chagas, Chari, and Malachi told the Jewish people were making a new takana, and you have to follow it. And the other one is that it's much weaker, that it's only a minhag. Now, we said Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, which one said which? Tisayim de Rabbi Yochanan, who do Amma Yisod Nevi'im. We can conclude that Rabbi Yochanan is the one who says that it's a Yisod of the Nevi'im, in other words, an actual takana. De Amma Rabbi Bo, Amma Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yisod Nevi'im. Because we find that Rabbi Bo who said that explicitly in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, good, Tisayim, so that establishes it. So Rabbi Yochanan says that it's a Yisod of the Nevi'im. Okay. So now the question is, did Rabbi Yochanan in fact say that the whole matter of the Arava, I said wrongly, we're not just talking about the waving or the beating, the chavata of the Arava. On the face of it, we're talking about the entire procedure with the Arava. That the entire procedure is only a Yisod Nevi'im or Minhag Nevi'im. So the question is, how could Rabbi Yochanan have said that? Well, Amr Rabbi Yochanan Meshum Rav Nechunya, Ich Bikas Beis Chorsan, Esen Etiyas Arava V'Nisach HaMayim, Halacha L'Moshem Yisinai. So that's it's Halacha L'Moshem Yisinai. It's not a Takana or a Minhag of the last Nevi'im, Chagas Chaliyah Malachi. So when Rabbi Bohu heard that, Eshtoimam Kishor Chodah, he was quiet for a while. The Lashon Eshtoimam Kishor Chodah is taken from a Pasuk in Daniel. Where Nebuchadnezzar has a dream that tells that he's going to have a terrible punishment befall him, and so the pasuk describes over there that Daniel was quiet for a while thinking of how to say it, and then he starts explaining the dream to Nebuchadnezzar. So here and in a couple of other places, the Gemara borrows that expression to describe when Amoda is asked a question and like he's stunned into silence for a little while trying to think of an answer. So here you have this fact. Rabbi Bohu has to really think into it. What do you mean? If it's Daraisa, then why are we calling it only Yisod Nevi'im? But Omar, and then he answered, Shchachom v'chazru v'yistum. The answer is, it was originally a halacha l'mishmi Sinai, but it's one of the halachas that they forgot during Golos Bavel. And then v'chazru v'yistum, and then Chagas Chariyah Malachi had to reestablish it. Rashi actually says an interesting point. They reestablish it al piyad dibur based on a nevuah, which is an interesting point because usually you don't establish halacha based on nevuah. You even have actually the Gemara and Tzmura that describes that there were several hundred halachas that were forgotten during the days of mourning for Moshe Rabbeinu, and then when they asked Yeshua, and later on they asked Pinchas and they asked Shmuel to reconstruct them based on nevuah, then they said no, total Torah b'shamayim he and Elam mitzvahs, that a Novi can't come up with something new. But here Rashi uses the expression that they did it al pi adibur. Anyway. So that's the answer. It's both. It's halacha l'moshem Sinai, but it's also Yisod Nevi'im because they reestablished it. So the question is, Umi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Hachi, how could it be that Rabbi Yochanan said that they forgot certain things in Bavel, and in particular this one they forgot altogether? Well, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Dilchoin Amri Dilchoin Hi, don't we find that Rabbi Yochanan said in a different context, I thought that the Torah is yours, and really I discovered that it's theirs? What does that mean? The Gemara tells us in Bava Kamma a story where Rav Kahana, one of the Talmidim of Rav, had to escape from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. It's a whole long story over there. There was a guy who was threatening to massa with somebody else, and Rav Kahana killed him because that's the din that you kill a prospective moser. And then Rav told him that now you're going to have to run away to Eretz Yisrael, otherwise you're going to be in danger from the government. Akitzer, anyway, he comes to Rav Yochanan's yeshiva. And to make a very long story short, Rabbi Yochanan discovered how great in Torah Rav Kahana really is. And so afterwards, Rashi says, he said to his Talmidim, who are also from Eretz Yisrael, I thought, Dilchoin Amri, I thought all this time, the best knowledge of Torah is yours, that we find here in Eretz Yisrael. Now I discovered, Dilchoin He, that it actually belongs to them, to the Bnei Bavel. They have a much greater knowledge of Torah than we do here in Eretz Yisrael. So according to that, then, Rabbi Yochanan himself knows that Rabbi Yochanan himself knows that there's greater knowledge of Torah in Bavel than there is in Eretz Yisrael. So how would Rabbi Yochanan have said that they forgot certain halachas during Golos Bavel, and that this one was so completely forgotten that Chag Zecharia and Malachi had to reestablish it? Tosfos and Rabbi Chananel and Tosfos and a number of other Rishonim have a different use. Tosfos says there's a couple of problems with that explanation of Rashi. One of them being that so what? We find other halachas where it says in other places in the Gemara that there are certain things that they forgot, and then the later Nevi'im, Chag Zecharia and Malachi reestablished. In all those places, the Gemara doesn't ask this question from what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. Why not? So Tosfos says no. What it means is so Rabbi Chananel has a somewhat different girsa, which Tosfos endorses, which is that he says not Amri but Omar Dilchoin Amri. Rabbi Yochanan speaks to his Talmidim who are from Bavel. According to this explanation, Rabbi Yochanan had many Talmidim from Bavel in front of him. And in fact, there's other places where Tosfos discusses that very often it was like that. Because heavy Golulim Kom Torah, not most, but maybe at least a substantial number of Rabbi Yochanan's Talmidim were in fact from Bavel, and vice versa, a substantial number of the Talmidim in the Yeshivas in Bavel were from Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Yochanan then turns to his Talmidim from Bavel, and he says to them, Dilchoin Amri, somebody, one of yours, meaning Rav Kahana, not Amri, but Omar, Dilchoin, one of yours, Omar, said to me, Dilchoin He, that this concept of the Arava is not Allah Chalamish Sinai, but rather it's from them, from the later Navi. Either way, the point is that Rabbi Yochanan, so according to Rashi, then the question is, that how could Rabbi Yochanan be saying that it was forgotten if, according to him, they didn't forget the Torah in Bavel? In fact, they did more so in Eretz Yisrael. And if we say, and according to Rabbi Chananel and Tosfos, the question is that Rabbi Yochanan himself agreed with and endorsed what Rav Kahana is saying, that the Arava is only a takana of the, not takana, a yisoid of the Nevi'im, and not halacha mishum Sinai. So how did we say before that he said it's halacha mishum Sinai? So the answer is Lekasha, kan b'mikdash, kan b'gvulin. Depends whether we're talking about in the Bais Mikdash or outside it. In the Bais Mikdash, it's halacha l'moshe v'sinai to take the Arava. And then we can discuss whether it involves, whether it involves only putting them around the Mizbeah, in which case we said Kohen and Bali Mumin might be excluded, or whether we're talking about actually going around the Mizbeah, in which case also maybe Kohen and Bali Mumin are excluded, maybe not. But anyway, all of that is halacha l'moshe v'sinai. In the Bais Mikdash, yeah. On the other hand, kan b'gvulin, as opposed to everywhere else in the world, then it's only a yisoid, then according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's only a yisoid of the Nevi'im, and according to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, it's even weaker than that. It's only a minhag of Nevi'im to take the Arava. So we're going to talk about again this matter of whether it's a minhag or not when we get to further down on the Amud. As we said before, according to Rashi, the nafkamina is whether you make a bracha on it or not. So we'll get back to that point soon. So first, let's talk about some dinim of the arava that you have to take in the Bais Mikdash, and nowadays outside the Bais Mikdash as well. So Amar Rav Ami, arava tzricha shir, the arava that you use for this mitzvah of arava needs a minimum shir, which we'll say soon how much. The Einan Nitellus Elabachne Atzma, it can only be taken by itself. You don't have something else bound together with it. Tosfos points out, it's not like you can't hold something else at the same time, is it? You could, for example, be holding your Arabis for Hashinus and also be holding your Siddur. That's not a problem, because they're not bound together. But you shouldn't have anything else bound together with them. And a third point is that a person cannot be yotze that with the arovas that are in the lulav. Now, not like we said now on Omer Aleph, Rava had argued that you could. And that's why at first he argued that that's why we don't do it the first 6 days, because during the first 6 days you can be yotzer with the one and the lulav.
No, but listen, they weren't yotzer with the one and the lulav.
Maybe according to the Rami and the Beis Hamikdash, they could have. At least to the extent that if you're walking around the Mizbeach, if you're walking around with your Dalad Minim, then you also included the Arava in it. But now Rav Ami is saying that no, you can't be Yotzer with the one and the Lulav. So the question is, Kivin de Omer Mar Ein Nitelus Elav Me'atzma. One second, Rav Ami's second statement was that you can only take the Aravas by themselves. Obviously, Pshita De'inonim Yotzer Ba'Arava Shav Lulav. So obviously that implies that you can't be Yotzer with the one with the Lulav, because then it's bound together with two other minim. So the five, one second. The fact that we do five Aravas is based on Kabbalah, because the Arabis represent Vuris, and it's Hey Vuris. Mitzad the technical din, as the Gemara is going to say soon, we only need three of them, and the number of bangings you have to do is not necessarily fixed either. The Rambam, for example, writes, in Hilchos Lulav, you bang it two or three times on the ground or on a keli. So the whole concept that we have five Arabis and five bangings is al pi Kabbalah. But anyway, the question is, why does Ami need to say his second and his third statement? If he's saying that you can only take it by itself, automatically that means you can't be Yotzer with the one and the Lulav. So why does he have to mention that separately? And the answer is Ma'u Tema, because if he hadn't said that, you might have thought, Hani Mili Hecha Deloi Agbehe V'Hoder Agbehe, maybe that would only apply if he didn't pick up the Lulav and the other minim once L'Shem Netzilas Lulav and once L'Shem Arava. Aval Agbehe V'Hoder Agbehe Emeloi. Maybe if he did that, maybe if he picked it up one time for the mitzvah of Lulav and a second time for the mitzvah of Arava, maybe he could be Yotzer with that. Kamash Malan, therefore, Rav Ami wants you to know that no, regardless, you can't be Yotzer with the one in the Lulav, even if you. You can't be Yotzer with the one in the Lulav, even if. It's even if you're picking it up a second time in order to be Yotzer that. Okay. Now that's Rav Ami's opinion that you can't be Yotzer with the one with Lulav. On the other hand, Rav Chista, I'm going to be a tough Adam Yotzer dechavas debar Rav Shabululav v'yom tevarish shochad. On the other hand, Rav Chista says that you could, which is like what Rav said on Amud Aleph. There is in fact a bit of machloikus among the poskim who the halacha is like. So maybe you could be Yotzer with the one Lulav, but in general we don't do that. We use separate ones and we're mahadur the mitzvah. If in principle, if you unbound the ones from the Lulav, then for sure you could be Yotzer with those. On the other hand, first of all, the Gemara is going to say that you need three of them and you only have two in the Lulav. In fact, some of the Mephoroshim say that's precisely why you have at least three in order to distinguish it from the one in the Lulav. But besides that, also, you do have the issue, really, the ones in the Lulav are reserved for that mitzvah. So therefore, you can't really unbind them from that and use them for a different mitzvah. Okay, the fact that it says here, v'yom tov rishon shochag, most of the Rishonim don't have that girsa, because what would be the difference? So you're Adarabah, we don't take it on the first day of Sukkot, we take it on Hashanah Rabbah. So there's no reason to mention v'yom tov rishon shochag. Marsha explains you can still keep it in. What it means is, what Rav Chista is saying, even in the Beis Mikdash, where they did the mitzvah of Arava all 7 days, nevertheless, even then, the first day, which is the first time you're also doing the mitzvah of lulav, you would be able to be yotzer appointed of chista with the one that's bound together with the other minim as well. Okay, so we said that you need a shiur for the arava. So the kama shiura, how much is the shiur? Now the Gemara is not focusing on the length of them. So we'll get back to that point, and we'll get back to that point of the length of them in a second. We're talking about how many of them. So Amar Rav Nachman Gimel Bade Olin Lachem. So Rav Nachman says that you have to have three branches, each of which has fresh leaves on them. There's a different explanation that's according to Rashi. Tosfos learns rather that what it means is that you have three leaves coming out of one branch, three fresh leaves on each branch. So according to Rashi, it would be enough that you have three branches, and each of them have some fresh leaves on them. Doesn't matter how many, or at least a couple. And according to Tosfos, each one would have to have at least three fresh leaves. Rav Sheshes Amar Afilu Ola Echad Uvad Echad. Rav Sheshes says it would be enough to have even one leaf and one branch. So now it sounds like Ola Echad Uvad Echad sounds like you have a branch, a bare branch, and then separately you have a leaf. What do you mean? Ola echad, vad echad, sak v'daydach. How can you think that way? Ela ema afilu ola echad div vad echad. What it means is Rav Sheshis is saying it's enough that you have one leaf on one branch, and that would be enough. So according to him, you don't need three branches like Rav Nachman had said. One branch is enough, and it only has to have one leaf on it. Nevertheless, already Rashi brings, and already Rabbi Goin says, that we don't want to do that. We don't want to do the mitzvah in a cheap way like that. Adadai, we bring beautiful, fresh, long aromas, and do the mitzvah ba'ayin yofa. As far as as far as the length of it, Rashi says that when it comes to the arava and the lulav, you need at least three tefachim, we learned in the previous parak. On the other hand, when it comes to this arava, it's not necessary for it to be three tefachim. Any length is fine. On the other hand, the Ran brings that it should be at least three tefachim, like the one in the lulav. Lamaisa, we're knowing that they're the ones that we get, the ones that we buy before in Shana Rabba, are considerably longer than three tefachim. Again, Minhag Yisrael is to get really nice, fresh ones and do the mitzvah and do the mitzvah behavior.
Top has to be a certain way, or you can cut the one big one and make five out of it.
It's a good question. So the poskim actually say they bring in Shulchan Aruch that the rule actually is that for the most part anything that passels the arava and the lulav would also passel the aravas for hishayness. And since we learned that one of the things that passels the arava is the top is chopped off, then yeah, that would be the answer. You can't cut multiple ones from one arava branch. One exception where it doesn't passel is if it's missing many of its leaves, the one for the lulav would be passel. The one here, as we're saying, after all, Rav Sheshis is saying you only need one leaf on it, so even though we don't do that, we try to get mehudar ones, nevertheless, if it's missing most of its leaves, and it still has the three leaves, like Tosfos talked about, then it's kosher, then it's kosher, unlike the one in the lulav.
The one in the lulav, when it comes out, it looks like it's,
Next. Omer Ivu, as an Ivu, who was the father of Rav, says, in the Kameder of Elazar by Tzadik, I was once standing in front of Rav Elazar by Tzadik. Now, Rashi mentions on Omer Aleph, let's look at the Seder Azmanim. Rav Tzadik was one of the Chachamim who lived through the Churban. He's the one who fasted for 40 years before the Churban. Anyway, so he had a son, Rav Elazar. So Rav Elazar may have been born before the Churban, may have been born after it, we don't know. But in any case, he was part of the generation of Tanoim that lived after the Churban. Now, he lived long enough that the father of that Ivu, the father of Rav, was able to meet with him. Now, Rav himself was born in Bavel, and Ivu Bapashkus lived in Bavel as well, but at some point he traveled to Eretz Yisrael, and he was there by Rav Elazar Rav Tzadik. Ivu and Rav Elazar Rav Tzadik are not related. Ivu was a Talmud learning by Rav Elazar Rav Tzadik. Rav Elazar Rav Tzadik himself belongs to the generation of Tanoim after the Churban. We think of the Seder as Manim like this. There was the Churban. Let's see. You have the Churban was in the year Gimel Alachim Tuf Tuf Choftes 3829. Rav passed away. Rav Shudah Goyen tells us, and his Igeris passed away in the year 4007. So from the Churban until when Rav passed away was a little under 180 years. Sometime during that period, you have enough time for Rav Elazar Rav Tzadik to be born, maybe shortly before the Churban or maybe after it. He lived, let's say 80, 90 years. So he's still alive. He's still alive, 80 years after the Churban. Ivu, who is already a grown man himself, meets up with him in Eretz Yisrael and learns certain things from him, as we're going to say in the Gemara over here. Later on, Ivu returned to Bavel. He fathered Rav over there, and Rav himself lived, again, 80 or 90 years, let's say. So it works out chronologically. Anyway, so Ivu says, in the Kamed Rav Elazar Rav Tzadik, I was standing in front of Rav Elazar Rav Tzadik, but Isiahu Gavra Arava Kamei, a certain person brought an Arava to him in order to do the mitzvah, or minhag of Chavitas Arava, of waving it or banging it. Shokil Chavit Leiborif. Rav Elazar Rav Tzadik took the Arava. He chavit it. Rashi says it's meloshen nanua. Other Rishonim learn that it means to bang it. So he did that. V'loy barich, he didn't say the bracha. Kasava minig neviim hu, which shows that Rav Elazar Rav Tzadik held, according to the opinion that we said before, it's minig neviim, as we said at the top of the Amud, the Mikdash, it's Halacha L'Moshe Mishinai, the Gvulim, it's not, it's from the Nevi'im, and we discussed Rabbi Yechanan says it's Yisod Nevi'im, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says that it's Minag Nevi'im, so if it's Minag Nevi'im, then you don't make a bracha on a Minag. That's what we said. Yisod means that the Chachamim, the Nevi'im, Chagis Chaya Malachi, made an actual takana, a formal takana. From now on, Jewish people, every year, Hashanah Rabbah, you should take the Arabas and do Chavota with them. Then you would make a bracha on it, the same way as we make a bracha on making an Eruv or saying Hallel or lighting the Menorah, etc., etc. Whereas we say a Minagna, which leads Tosfos into a long discussion about that, and other Rishonim as well, on the question, is that in fact the case that you don't make a bracha on a minute? Now, Tosfos refers to a Gemara in Tainis that tells us that Rav one time found people saying Hallel on Rosh Chodesh, and he was gonna protest and say there's no Indian to say Hallel on Rosh Chodesh. Then he saw they're saying only Chatzi Hallel, so he realized in that case, because they're doing it Minig Abisayim B'Yadayim. But Tosfos says, on the face of it, that must mean that they must have made a bracha, otherwise you would know to begin with that they're only saying halal because of minhag. That goes to show that you do make a bracha on something that's mishum minhag. So Tosfos gets into a long discussion about the pros and cons of that. When do we say that we do make a bracha on a minhag, when not? The Ravid also discusses this, and the Rambam mentions in Hilchos Brachos this rule from the Gemara over here that you never make a bracha on a minhag. And the Ravid says, what are you talking about? You see that when you say Chatzi Hallel, you do say a bracha on it. Which in fact, according to the Rambam, you would not. So one distinction that they make is between a mitzvah that's meant like Hallel, which is praising Hashem, versus the Chavitas Arava, which is not, it's waving or banging the Aravas. So then that's a weaker kind of minhag, and you wouldn't say a bracha on that. As opposed to when we're talking about a minhag that's to glorify and praise Hashem, like Hallel, then it would be appropriate to say a bracha even when you're saying it only mishum minhag. Lamaisa, you do have that machloikas then, whether you say the bracha on Chatzi Hallel, which is why in the Siddur it says that when you're saying Chatzi Hallel, then you should listen to the Chazan's bracha and be yotze with him. Lamaisa, many people are not knowing that, especially because Friedrich Rebbe told people that yizdares levorech v'chashai. You should hurry up and make the bracha privately and not just be yotze with the Chazan's bracha. Or you say bracha v'chashmai, right. So that would be a possible nafka minhag of whether, so again, but that applies to Hallel, the Chavitas Arava is something else, and based on our Gemara, we're saying that if it's only a minhag, you don't say a bracha on it. Similarly, the Gemara says, Aivu v'chizki of Bnei Brate de Rav. Similarly, Aivu, Rav's father was named Aivu, but now he also had a grandson named Aivu. And Chizkiya, who were the grandchildren of Rav, Aisu Arava l'kameh de Rav, they also brought an Arava to Rav for Chavitas Arava. Same thing, Chavit v'le Baruch. He waved it or banged it, did not say the bracha. Same thing, Kasava Minag Nevi'im, who, because again, he also holds it's Minag Nevi'im. So even though we had Rabbi Yochanan before saying that it's Yisod Nevi'im, we're now saying that according to a number of opinions, it's only Minag Nevi'im, and therefore you don't say a bracha on it. Well, Maskana, that's how it is. Nobody says a bracha on it. Okay. Since we're talking about Aivu and Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik, so the Gemara mentions a couple of other things that Aivu learned from Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik. So Amar Aivu, have a ka'im the kamed Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik. I was standing as a Talmud in front of Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik. Also a kamea hu gavra, and a certain person came to him with a shayla. Amale, the man explains, kiryosa isli, I have villages that belong to me. Kamaya isli, I have vineyards, Zesaya Isli, and I have orchards of olives. Now during Shnita, but also Bnei Kiryasa, the people of those villages come, or Makashkish in the Kaimaya, they're hoeing in the vineyards, meaning like we said before about plowing a field for the sake of the 10 young trees over there. With vineyards, it's similar, as the Gemara is going to explain soon, that you have, there's actually two different things called Kishkush, the Gemara is going to explain soon, but right now we're talking about the kind that involves hoeing the ground, digging up the ground in order to aerate it, in order that more air gets to the roots of the plants and they grow better. So they're doing that. But Ochrin b'zeisaya, and they're eating from the olives. So now on the face of it, the eating of the olives amounts to payment for what they're doing in the vineyards. So the question is, Arich, or Loi Arich, is this proper to do or not? Rashi refers to a pasuk in Ezra where the word Arich means suitable or fitting or something like that. So so is this the right thing to do? Amalei Loi Arich. So Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek says to him, it's not proper because then it amounts to that you are paying off your debt to them with Peiros Shviyas. And we learned a few days ago that La'ochla v'loy l'schora, you're not allowed to make a business of selling Shemitah fruit. You're allowed to. You have too much of some kind of fruit. Then you can trade it to somebody for something else, whether money or food or whatever, but not to make a business of it. And not in this case, you're paying them off for their work in the vineyards using olives of Shemitah, and you can't do that. So the Gemara continues. Havak Hashavik Leva Ozel. So this guy was leaving and he was leaving and going. Omar, so Rav Elazar ben Tzedek says, to do Havesi Dairi Ba'ara Hadam Mem Shnin. I've already been living in this country for 40 years. V'loy Chamisi Bar Inish. I've never seen a person Mahalach Ba'orchan the Taknan who's going in such proper ways in such a Derech Yosher Kedain like this guy. So he's very impressed by what this guy did. Now why is he so impressed? So the Aruch HaNer has a long explanation. Ben Yehoyada has a shorter explanation. The gist of it is that they explain that there wasn't necessarily an actual issue of paying them with Peiros Shviyas over here. It wasn't really an actual technical issue. It was more a matter of Maris Ayin. Ben Yehoyada explains in particular that he says, why did the guy have to mention separately Kiryasa Isli, Karmaya's Isli? Just say, in all in one breath, I have Kiryasa, Karmaya, and Zesaya. So he explains that the guy acquired his Nechasim in stages. First he owned the villages. Later on he came to have vineyards. Later on he came to have olives. So all this time the people had been working in his vineyards. And only now that he has the olives that are starting to eat from them. So therefore maybe it's not really paying them from it. Maybe it's just, I mean, look, you're in Hefker, all the fruit, doing Shemitah, all the fruit is Hefker. So they've been doing work for him all this time. Now that the olives are available, then they're coming and eating from the olives. So it's not really a matter of being Pereyam or Peiros Shviyas. Therefore, the guy is not asking Osir or Mutter. He's just saying, Arich, Eloi Arich, is it the proper thing, or does it look like Maris Ayin? And Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek tells him that it looks like Maris Ayin. So therefore, he's very impressed that the guy is concerned not only about the actual halacha, but even about something of Maris Ayin like that. So that's one point. Another point also that the Aruch HaNer makes, what impressed Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek so much, is again, even though we're not talking an actual issur, only a matter of Maris Ayin, and as the Gemara is going to go on to say, this same guy had a further shaila, what should he do? But he didn't wait over there until he could ask the next shaila, the follow-up shaila, so what should I do? He immediately ran out to get the matter taken care of as fast as possible. So that's what impressed Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek. That's another thing of what it's also brought a similar thing. The Aruch HaNer says it. It's also brought a similar thing in the name of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. That's what impressed Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek about the guy so much that he still has to come back for another shaila, but he's first gonna run out, take care of the matter right now on the spot, and only then he'll deal with his follow up shaila. So what should I do? What? This that he has to go tell the people, you can't eat, we can't have anymore, we can't have this arrangement that you're going to be hoeing the vineyards and then you're going to eat, and then you're going to eat the olives as payment. I mean, you can eat the, he's going to ask soon, so what should I do? But the point is that he ran out right away to take care of this matter, even though it's only Maris Ayin, and that's what impressed Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek. This, by the way, that Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek says, I'm living in this country for 40 years, what does he mean by that? I mean, he lived his whole life in Eretz Yisrael. Dodo sort of showed him, explains that when we say over here in this country, he doesn't mean the whole Eretz Yisrael, he means this region of Eretz Yisrael. What happened was, during the decades after the Churban, the Romans made it their policy that Jews should not live as much as possible, that Jews should not live in the southern part of Eretz Yisrael, in Eretz Yehuda. As much as possible, they should live in the Galil. The Sanhedrin itself had to move to the Galil a few times during that period, to Usha, and later on to Shfaram, and so forth, and many of the Chachamim also moved there. So Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek was one of these Chachamim who at some point during the period after the Churban moved to the Galil. So now he's saying, many years later in this story, he's saying to Ivo that I'm living here, meaning here in the Galil, not here in Eretz Yisrael as a whole, for 40 years already, and now I find this guy very impressive. Basically, because the Romans knew that that we have an attachment to Yerushalayim, and they were trying to break that attachment. Next, continues the Gemara.
Things have not changed.
Things have not changed much in a couple of thousand years. That is sadly true. Next, Hodor Va'asi, soon afterwards, this guy came back, Va'omale, my neved. So he says to the Balaz of Rav Tzadik, okay, so how should I arrange things? What should I do to avoid the Isser or the Marasayan or whatever? Omale, so the Balaz of Rav Tzadik tells him, after Zesaya L'chashuchaya, what you should do is make the olive hefter to the poor people, of the 10 pritaya L'chashkoshe kramim, and as far as the people who are hoeing in the who are hoeing and improving the ground in the vineyards over there, pay them prutus. So in other words, don't say that you're going to pay them with peiros shviyas with their olives. Instead, pay them out of your own pocket.
Why not going to?
Well, because it's Shmittah. Everything is hefker.
Yeah, but that's
that. Now, the point. In other words, don't just say that these people are going to be coming and take right like this. It's already hefker. But in other words, make sure that it really is hefker for everybody that anybody can come in and take, not just these people from the villages who are working for you. And then, as far as how you're going to pay them, you're going to have to pay them out of pocket. So the question is, now, the premise is that either way, the fact that they're doing this kishkush is fine. The question is only the paying them. So the Gemara asks, Kishkushi Mishari, is that in fact the case that you're allowed to do Kishkush during Shemitah? For Hatanya, we learn in a Braisa that when the Pasuk says, Vashviyas Tishbetena or Natashta, that during Shemitah you should abandon it, and you should abandon it and you should let it go. That means the Tishbetena Melakashkish. It means besides for in Parshas Bahar, when it talks about Shemitah, it talks about the certain malachas that it says that you're not allowed to do. Sad Chalei Sizra, Vachama Chalei Sizmer. But also from these words, Tishbetena and Natashta, we also learn Tishbetena Melakashkish means you're not allowed to do Kishkush during Shemitah, this hoeing around the roots, and Natashta Melasakel. And Natashta, you should abandon it, means also you're not allowed to take rocks out of the ground on Shemitah, which also improves the soil. The truth is, the Gemara actually in Moed Cotton, where you have a sugya about the dinim of Shemitah, the Gemara explains over there that actually these things only did Rabbanan and the Pasuk is an Asmachta. Be that as it may, the point is you're not allowed to do Kishkush during Shemitah. How is Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik telling the guy that the Kishkush is fine, it's only the paying the workers that's the problem? The answer is Amar of Ukva Bahama Tre Kishkushi Habu. There's two different kinds of activities that are called Kishkush. Chad Stumi Pili, one of them involves closing up the cracks. The Chad Avruya Ilani, and the other one is to pierce the dirt around the roots. So in other words, Rashi says a second explanation. Avruya can also mean to make the tree healthy. So one of them is, in other words, Rashi explains, let's say the roots are exposed. And that's no good. You need to cover them so that the plant doesn't dry up. That you're allowed to do even during Shemitah. Because the general rule is, we'll learn in Moed Cotton in a couple of months, Bas Hashem, that you're allowed to do malachas during Shemitah that are meant to keep the trees from dying or the ground itself from becoming completely infertile or something. You're not allowed to do things to improve the trees or whatever. So here, where the roots are exposed and you need to hoe around them in order to cover them with dirt, that you're allowed to do during Shemitah. That was the kind of kishkush that this guy was asking about.
Making holes.
Then the second kind is where the roots are already covered and you're making holes here and there in the ground in order for air to be able to get to the roots. That you're not allowed to do during Shemitah. Well, so we said, so for Natias, we said you're allowed to do it until Rosh Hashanah of Shemitah, but not beyond that. Yeah. Okay. So Avruya Iloni also, so the kind that involves piercing the ground or making the trees healthier is also Stumi Pili, but the kind that involves closing up the cracks, covering up the roots, Shari, that kind is Mutter. So that was the kind that people were doing for the sky, and that's what he was asking about. Okay. Another din that Ivu says in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik, Omo Ivu Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik, Al Yahalach Odeh Ba'Av Shabbos is Yosim Gimel Parsois. A person should not travel on Erev Shabbos more than 3 parsa. A parsa is about 2.5, and it's about 2.5-3 miles. So you're talking somewhere around eight or nine miles, 8 or 10 miles or so. Amar Rav Kahana, Lo Yamoran Elo Leveise. So Rav Kahana says that's only talking about if he's going. The point is, in other words, that he shouldn't be traveling that distance on Erev Shabbos because he should be stopping long before Shabbos and prepare the Shabbos Suda. On Erev Shabbos, obviously on Shabbos itself, you can't travel yet. So, Amar Rav Kahana, Lo Yamoran Elo Leveise. So Rav Kahana says that's only talking about if he's traveling home. So the point is, they don't know that he's going to come today, so that his family won't prepare for him. And then what's going to happen is, there's not going to be enough food, but also Rashi says is going to get angry at them, so it's going to disturb the tranquility of Shabbos. But if he's traveling to a hotel, to an inn or something, then there's no problem with that because I might not get some of, because then he's not relying on them to provide him food. He takes along his food with him because he never knows whether at the inn they're going to have enough for him. And therefore that would be fine. He anyway has food with him, so then he doesn't have to worry about that they may not prepare enough food. One second. The Ika de Amri. Another that you must remember this from last time because we haven't learned this before. Yeah. The Ika de Amri. However, another version is Amar Kahana Lo Nitzrucha El Afilu Lebeis. No, according to the second lashon, even if he's going home, according to the second version, Fakir. If he's going to a hotel, for sure there might not be enough food there. Even if he's going home, where on the face of it they have enough food, nevertheless he shouldn't be going more than 3 parasa, because again they might. So even at home, where whatever they have, he's going to eat for Shabbos, whether there's a lot or a little. Nevertheless, he shouldn't. And Amar Rav Kahana, b'didi hava uvda. In fact, Rav Kahana says it happened once to me that I traveled more than 3 parasa on Erev Shabbos to go to my house, but after the cost of the house, and the result was I couldn't even find cost of the house, which is a very cheap dish, which is made out of fish fried in flour and their own fat. Even that wasn't available because they'd run out of food. So now, in Shulchan Aruch, it brings this concept. However, there are a couple of things involved. First of all, So we have 2 lashonis. The halacha is like the second lashon. However, first of all, as you said, if he informs them that he's coming, then in fact it's fine because then they know that he's coming and they'll know to prepare for him. Second of all, also it mentions in Shulchan Aruch, and it goes back to the Rishonim, that nowadays we prepare Shabbos more by hachava. We have plenty of extra food, even if we have mice and b'chol yom, that unexpected guests show up and we have plenty of food for them. So therefore, there's less of an issue with it. So therefore, the mice, people are not noyig to make sure to the people are noyig not to be nizer in that, and people travel much more than 3 parasa on Erev Shabbos. Well, nowadays that we have refrigerators also, of course, but even in the olden times before they had fridges, they still had a much larger supply of food than they did in the time of the Gemara, where it could happen, like Rav Kahana is saying, that he found out that there's not even kosher d'harsina available. How Rav Kahana himself is traveling more than 3 parasa, when we said you're not allowed to, by the way, the Aruch HaNer explains, because there is a further exception that the post can mention. If, for example, a person is in a dangerous area and he has no choice but to keep traveling, then he should do that. Or also, not just a dangerous area, but also, we said before, if he has food with him, but what if he doesn't have food with him? Then he should keep on traveling to a place where he's going to be able to find something that he's going to be able to make for Shabbos. So that would have been the situation with one of those would have been the situation with Rav Kahana, and therefore he does in fact travel more than 3 parasa, but again, he got home unexpectedly and there wasn't even cost of the house available. Okay, let's see if we can finish up till the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said mitzvah lulav ketzad. We said that the mitzvah of lulav in the Bismikdash, we said that everybody would bring the lulavim to the Bismikdash before Shabbos, and the chazonim, the shamoshim, would put them, we said, al gav ha'itzdavah, on the benches surrounding the harabais. So the Gemara says, Toni Tana Kamejer of Nachman, a Tana taught the Mishnah in front of Rav Nachman using the words, Sodrin al Gag Itzdava, that they would put it on the roof of the Itzdava. These benches had roofs over them so you could sit on the benches even when it's bad weather. So the Tana taught that they're putting it on the roof of the Itzdava. Amalei, so Rav Nachman tells him, why on the roof? Does he need to dry them out? You don't want to put them on the roof. They're going to get dried out between Friday and Shabbos. Rather, what you should say is they put them al gav, meaning on the benches below the roofs. And that way, at least, there's a chance that they'll stay fresh until the next day. Tosfos actually points out an interesting thing. We had in Pesachim the other way around, where you have shtei chalas shel toida. It says they took 2 chalas of a korban toida that had become posel and put them above the itzvah in order as a signal to everybody when you were still allowed to eat chametz, when you have to stop eating but you don't have to burn yet, when you have to burn chametz. And there it was the other way around. The Tana taught al gava itzvah, and Rav Nachman points out to him that then nobody's going to see them. To be our gaga itzvah. Here, the Tana made exactly the opposite mistake. What happened was, Tosfos says, first the Tana taught both of them with the same words. Then when Rav Nachman pointed out to him by one of them that it's wrong, and it had by that it has to be our gag, so he thought this one is also our gag, and therefore Rav Nachman had to correct him yet again. think what I mentioned in Soja, that these Tanoim who talk the Shnayas and Braises in the Yeshivas weren't always the greatest Talmid Chachamim. Some of them basically just had a good memory, but they didn't really know the actual Inyan. So it seems that this Tana was probably one of them. So, okay, the Gemara finishes off. Omer Rach va Omer of Yehuda, Harabayis Stov Kofel Hoya. The Harabayis, in fact, was a double stov. A stov is another word for itztava. It's this area with benches and a roof above it. There was actually a double row, stov, Lefnimi Stov, one row of benches with a roof over them, further in from another one. So there was one row surrounding the walls, and then within that there was another row. So on those benches is where, covered by roofs, is where they would place the lovim, and is where they would place the lovim before Shabbos. And then we said the next day the chazanim, the shamashim, would give them to the people and throw them to the people, whatever, in order to be yotzei. Everyone?